as always. For your second update this morning, we've got some news on Dirty Green Energy. That, of course, was our series last week on renewable energy and how dirty it really is for the environment, for people, and for America's national security. One issue in particular that we discussed was about batteries and a mineral inside of them called lithium. It's basically the new oil. It has to be taken out of the ground through mining, refined, and then put into batteries. Well, today we've got an update on lithium, and the bottom line is you are going to pay a lot more for those lithium batteries and any energy stored inside them. Bloomberg News is reporting that the price for lithium carbonate hit a fresh record late last week, $71,315 a ton. That number has tripled in the past year, and it is more than 1,000% higher than its low in July of 2020. Meanwhile, prices of lithium hydroxide, which involves a slightly different chemistry, but it's also used in batteries, well, that is also gaining in price and closing in on an all-time record set in April. So what's driving these skyrocketing prices is pretty simple. Basically a flat supply, no new mines to speak of, and skyrocketing demand. Well, unfortunately, that's not going to change anytime soon. Companies involved in lithium production, companies like Mineral Resources Limited, are telling investors that supply will be deeply limited through at least the year 2030. So you can expect battery prices to keep going up. And not just for electric vehicles, but electronics of any kind that require batteries. I'll keep you posted. Before we take a quick break, first, an update on our series on dirty green energy, which highlighted the costs and challenges of switching America to renewable energy. On Tuesday, a major fire broke out in Monterey County, California, at an energy storage facility, specifically inside an industrial lithium-ion battery made by Tesla. It was storing energy from solar and wind energy, amongst other things, and it burst into flames, as lithium-ion batteries sometimes do. The county sheriff issued an emergency shelter-in-place order, told folks to shut off ventilation systems and close their windows out of fear that the toxic chemical smoke from those batteries would get inside of people's homes and their lungs. Meanwhile, they shut down the famous Highway 1 along the coast for both fear of smoke and explosions. The fire is now under control, but it was a reminder to residents that lithium-ion fires are notoriously bad and usually very hard to put out, all because they burn at such hot temperatures and emit toxic fumes. To the point, last year there was a similar fire of a Tesla battery in Australia. It took firefighters 3 days in hazmat suits to put it out. We've also seen electric cars burst into flames during shipment, to include when a cargo vessel full of battery-powered cars burst into flames, sinking that ship and requiring a rescue operation for the crew of 22. So bottom line, folks, there is no such thing as perfect energy, and dirty green renewables are no different. So keep this story, though, in mind if you do choose to go dirty green and you have those battery packs in your garage. They are a fire danger, and you should have an emergency plan to deal with it accordingly. For our third update this morning, we've got quite a study out on dirty green energy, which, as listeners know, is my focus on the nation's move away from an oil and gas-powered economy to renewable energy and electric vehicles. Well, researchers at Stanford University are warning this morning that as electric vehicle sales start to climb, we might just run out of electricity to charge them. And that's because researchers discovered that the sun doesn't always shine at night. In fact, it never does. Okay, that's not exactly what they said, but it's pretty close, actually. So here's what I mean. The researchers looked at 11 Western states and modeled what would happen when more and more people bought electric vehicles and started charging them. Well, as it turns out, about 80% of electric vehicles get charged at night. That's because owners come home from work and then plug in their cars to charge as they sleep. But that presents a problem. Because as the researchers noted, Western states in particular, like sunny California and Arizona, are moving their grids to more solar energy. But if people are charging their cars at night, well, there's not as much energy because the sun is not out at night. The researchers added that wind patterns also tend not to be as robust at night, so All in all, you are switching most of your electricity demand to the evening hours when your sources of energy are not producing. You could say there is a disconnect. All right, sorry, terrible dad joke. Anyway, the authors of this study are proposing some solutions. So for instance, your employer and every company imaginable around the country could spend billions of dollars to install plug-in towers at workplaces. And that way people can take advantage of solar power when the sun is out. They're also recommending that people buy more home battery packs. Now those could charge throughout the day, and then the cars would draw that power at night. But two things pretty problematic with this. First, those battery packs, for instance, from Tesla, run about $12,000 to $90,000 on top of course, $60,000 to $120,000 that you will spend on the actual car. And as listeners know, the prices for these batteries are likely going to rise. So to refresh our memories on why, we don't control the battery supply chain. We don't mine the lithium or the cobalt inside those batteries. We don't refine the material, nor do we have enough battery manufacturers to put it all together. All right, second issue here. If you can afford the upwards of $90,000 on battery packs, you'll want to make sure that those batteries are outside of the home, since lithium-ion batteries do catch on fire. We talked about that last week. And you don't want those things in your garage bursting into flames. At any rate, we will continue to learn more things about renewable energy as the years go by. Perhaps more studies discovering that the sun is not out at night. All right, now I'm just being sassy. Let's take... Welcome back to the PDB. As always, I'm watching a few other stories this morning. Put these two on your radar. First, we're actually going to continue our main brief just a little bit on the natural gas pipelines exploding and connect it to a remarkable story on Europe's addiction to slave-made solar panels. So as news broke about the pipelines exploding in the Baltic Sea, the White House press secretary responded by saying, quote, "This just drives home the importance of the efforts to accelerate true energy independence by moving the world to a clean energy economy," end quote. In other words, we all just need more dirty green energy. Well, this morning we have reporting from Bloomberg News that Europe is trying to do just that by purchasing a record number of solar panels made by Chinese slave labor. Data from January through July of this year show that European nations have purchased a record number of solar panels from Chinese manufacturers, specifically and especially from the Xinjiang province. So to refresh our memories, products made in that province, including solar panels and their materials like polysilicon, they're mostly made by the Uyghur people, an ethnic minority that the communist government in Beijing has locked inside of concentration camps and forces them to work in factories like solar panel factories. And my goodness, is Europe snapping up those solar panels. Sales totaled $14.2 billion in just the first 6 months of this year. Or to put that a bit differently, 54 gigawatts of total power. And that's actually up from a forecast of 41 gigawatts for the whole year. To just emphasize the point, folks, European governments know exactly what they're buying. They're actually considering a law to ban the purchase of goods from this region, the Xinjiang area. But it's not on the books yet. So obviously they are buying in bulk now before they have to face restrictions. So as we hear about this clean energy economy stuff, again, words used yesterday by the White House, just be reminded that there remains a very ugly, frankly, and even horrific side to their dirty green goals. And speaking of energy, we've got one final radar brief for the morning. Joe Biden is again attacking gas station owners for high gas prices. On Monday, he was at a White House meeting discussing the American economy. He was not very happy about recent gas price increases. So here is what he said. Quote, "My message is simple. To the companies running gas stations and setting those prices at the pump, bring down those prices now. Do it now." For what it's worth, Biden said virtually the exact same thing back in early July. But then, as now, he was wildly wrong on the facts. So let's review those once more. According to the National Association of Convenience Stores, over 60% of gas stations in America are owned by an individual or family that own one single store. Another 30% or so of gas stations are owned by independent chains or grocery stores like Costco. The remaining 5% of America's gas stations are owned by large corporate oil or refining companies. Now, that might surprise some folks because of the number of signs that you see when you fill up for gas. For instance, you see a sign that says Chevron or BP or Exxon. But what you might not know is that oftentimes those are franchisees. So let's just actually put some numbers to this. Exxon's chief executive told Congress recently that it doesn't own or operate a single U.S. gas station. BP said of the 7,500 stations under its brand, it owns only about 10% of those. Finally, Chevron. They operate about 300 stations on the West Coast, but that's of the 8,000 that bear the names Chevron and Texaco. So bottom line here is that when Joe Biden attacks gas stations, he's actually attacking mostly small business owners. Now, one last fact check here. According to that same National Association of Convenience Stores, most of its members do make some money off of gas. But, well, let me ask you, how much do you think that they make off of a single gallon of gas? What's your rough guess? Because the answer is 1 to 5 cents per gallon, depending on the gas station. Most profit for owners actually comes from the food and the drinks and the cigarettes that consumers buy when they go inside to pay the bill and such. So there it is, folks. Once again, Joe Biden and anybody else is welcome to attack, frankly, whomever they'd like about rising gas prices. But gas station owners should not be one of them. And with that, one more thing before I let you go. A listener question, as always. We'll be right back. Let's keep with the theme of energy and focus for a moment on dirty green energy, specifically those electric vehicles. As it turns out, owning one is going to be pretty expensive, at least to insure it. CNBC is reporting that both in the United States and in China, where electric vehicles make up about 25% of sales, the insurance premiums are running customers about 15 to 20% more than gas-fueled vehicles. And the reason is twofold. First, when electric vehicles get into accidents, they tend to start on fire or even blow up as compared to gas-fueled cars. That means insurance companies are going to have higher loss ratios. They can't just pop out that dent when the whole thing looks like a barbecue pit. Second, electric vehicles are much more expensive to repair once they are in an accident, even if they don't start on fire. The battery packs themselves run in the tens of thousands of dollars to repair or replace. Plus, the parts tend to be harder to come by. On a final note, I didn't see any data on the likelihood that drivers or passengers of electric vehicles are more or less likely to die or be injured given the increase of fires, but it's something that I'm going to keep looking for because that seems kind of important, maybe something that we should nail down before we all start buying these things. Welcome back to the PDB, ladies and gentlemen. One more thing before I let you go. Andrew in New Orleans, Louisiana wrote in, he was wondering about finding a middle ground option when it comes to electric vehicles and climate change. So here's what he said. I recently rented a hybrid vehicle, gas and electric, for a fairly long business trip in West Texas. It was quiet, it was fast, and it got 61 miles per gallon. So my question is, why aren't the climate change folks pursuing hybrids? It's the logical and ideal vehicle. It burns fossil fuels, yes, but much less of it. And it doesn't require a new national grid or a network of charging stations. Oh, Andrew, look at you using logic and common sense. I'll tell you, jokes aside, I think you're proposing something that is very sensible. Hybrids give us time to ramp up production of American lithium and cobalt, which are so critical for the batteries that we need, but we don't mine enough of that stuff in this country. Hybrids would also allow us to build up the capacity to refine those minerals. The refining capacity, of course, is mostly in China right now. Plus, hybrids would let us still have our oil and gas industry to create good jobs and, most importantly, have reliable energy for the grid. And oh, by the way, we would also have less smog, too. But the issue, Andrew, is that the fans of dirty green energy aren't interested in your logic and facts and data. They don't want common sense or reasonable solutions. Sadly, they don't want to meet you halfway. And that's because, as I've shared previously with you and others, progressive writers and activists make very clear that this dirty green revolution isn't really about the environment or climate change. It's about revolution, specifically a political revolution. These folks have themselves said that this moment is a chance for them to end capitalism and embrace socialism. I shared that earlier based on writings in magazines like The Atlantic. And that's a real shame. We could have found common ground, middle ground, but that's not what these folks want. They want a revolution. So you all can decide if you want to go along with that or instead find ways to fight back. It's October 5th. You're listening to the President's Daily Brief. I'm your host and former CIA officer, Brian Dean Wright. Your morning intel starts now. We've got a special edition of the PDB this morning. It's a totally new episode on the dirty green revolution. And today, it's all about electric vehicles. For those unaware, we had a four-part series starting on September 12th that looked into solar, wind, batteries, and the mining of materials to make those batteries. Now, the goal was to apply a critical eye towards these renewable industries and ask whether they're really as green and without cost as proponents tell us. Well, one thing that we didn't look into a few weeks back was electric vehicles. And it's really important that we do. And the reason is that Joe Biden signed a $370 billion bill last month with billions to make sure that you buy one of these electric vehicles. Plus, in the past couple of weeks, the states of California, New York, and others have passed laws banning the sale of new gas-powered vehicles by the year 2035. And of course, car manufacturers, they're getting in on this too. General Motors, for example, has announced that they will stop building gas-powered cars by 2035 as well. So we have to talk about this as a country and as consumers. Now, to do that, I want us to imagine that we are inside the car dealership staring down our salesman. And we've already peppered him with questions about some of the more horrific things that we talked about during the previous episodes of Dirty Green. For instance, the batteries inside that car we're about to buy, well, those minerals may well have come from child miners in the Congo. And then those minerals were almost certainly sent to China to refine and manufacture into batteries, meaning that your purchase of this electric vehicle is about to fund child labor and the communists in Beijing. You know, but maybe you're okay with that. Maybe you're going to buy one of these dirty green cars because of something more important to you, climate change. Well, you should still ask three very important questions before, of course, you pull the trigger and make that purchase. First and most obviously, how much does this car cost to buy? Second, how much does it cost to maintain and insure? Finally, and this one I promise will shock you, how long does it take to fill up the tank? In other words, how long does it take to charge the car's batteries? So let's start with that first question. How much is that car going to cost us? Well, according to the Kelley Blue Book, the average price of a new electric vehicle is just over $66,000. Now, that is a lot more than what most people pay for a new gas-powered car, which averages about $43,000, again, according to Kelley Blue Book. In other words, the price of an electric vehicle is actually pretty comparable to what a buyer would normally spend on a luxury vehicle, like a BMW i4 or a Mercedes-Benz E-Class. Now, to be fair, the government really wants you to buy these electric vehicles, so they are offering you incentives. Specifically, some electric vehicles under this Biden deal are eligible for a federal tax rebate of up to $7,500. But, and there's always a but, to get that rebate, new electric vehicles can't cost more than $55,000 for sedans and $80,000 for SUVs and trucks. But wait, the average cost of an electric vehicle is already above that threshold. So that's kind of a problem. It knocks out a huge number of makes and models from eligibility. But wait, there's more. To get that full rebate, the car's metals and batteries have to be 40% made in North America. But as PDB listeners will probably recall, the United States does very little mining for those metals and minerals, most especially inside the batteries. Instead, all that material is almost exclusively coming from Australia, Chile, the Congo, and China. But wait, there's even more. The price of these electric vehicles are set to keep going up, and I mean way up. And the reason, those darn batteries. Remember, these things are huge. They weigh over 1,000 pounds depending on the make and the model, and that includes hundreds of pounds of rare metals. So the price of these metals is skyrocketing. For example, the prices of nickel and lithium have more than tripled since 2017. Cobalt is similar. Mining executives say that the prices for these critical battery minerals will continue to rise through at least 2035 because demand is so high. Plus, new mines can't be opened fast enough, in part because of environmental protests, which is rather ironic. Okay, so that takes care of the first question, the cost of an electric vehicle. So the key takeaway here is it's going to be expensive, very expensive, and it's likely to get much worse because of the cost of those batteries. And that takes us to our second question that you should ask of your salesman. How much is that vehicle going to cost me to maintain and insure as compared to a gas-powered vehicle? So let's talk about maintenance. Electric vehicles have far fewer parts as compared to a gas vehicle. That means, according to AAA, that the average cost to maintain an electric vehicle is going to run you about $950 annually, which is a savings, actually, of about $330 over a gas-powered vehicle. But, oh, here we go again with the buts. The cost of repairing an electric vehicle can be significantly more than a gas-powered car. According to a recent study of one of the most common insurance claims, specifically for when a small or non-luxury brand car has a modest front-end damage, in other words, a little fender bender, the average electric vehicle cost to repair that kind of accident was $4,041. That's about 27% more than a traditional car in that same kind of accident. And if you had a mid-size or luxury brand electric vehicle, the average claim there was $8,037 in repairs, or 53% higher than traditional cars for that same kind of accident. But why is that? Well, the bottom line is that the repair parts are more expensive to make, all based on their materials. And oh my goodness, that battery. If your electric vehicle's battery gets damaged and it's not under warranty, you are looking at a $20,000 repair bill for a new one. One of the other issues on repairs, by the way, since electric vehicles are a new technology, there are fewer technicians trained to service them. That means qualified facilities will be harder to find and may charge more for repairs. Plus, studies show that it takes about 50% longer to diagnose and fix a problem on these electric vehicles compared to traditional vehicles. So all told, labor costs for repair are about 30% higher for your electric vehicle. And speaking of, what about those insurance costs? Well, since electric vehicles cost more and are more costly to repair, insurance companies are naturally going to charge you more. According to a study of insurance premiums, electric vehicles cost about 15% more a year to insure annually compared to a gas-powered vehicle. Plus, there's this. Electric vehicles tend to start on fire more often than gas-powered cars, especially during accidents. Those batteries can be very finicky and a bit explosive. So the bottom line message, folks, on maintenance and insurance is this. If you own an electric vehicle, do not get into an accident. And yes, you are welcome for that very sage advice. All right, so we've talked about the cost of our car, the cost of repairs, and the cost of insurance. And now we are at the part of the brief that I am so very excited to share with you, because it's the part that, frankly, I learned the most about. And I'm going to be honest with you, I've spent a few hours laughing over what I'm about to share. So let's imagine that we are back with our car salesman and we're still thinking about buying one of these dirty green machines. But we've got one final question. How long will it take to charge this electric vehicle? Because that's pretty important. With gas-powered cars, we pull into the pump, and depending on how full our gas tanks might be, you're spending anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes to fill up. Okay, if you've got a semi or a big truck, maybe upwards of 10 minutes, especially with a slow pump. But What about for electric vehicles? Well, if your car salesman is honest, he's going to pour you a cup of coffee or maybe a cocktail, because his answer, again, if honest, well, it's going to take him a long while. That's because there are at least five variables that will determine how long it takes to fill up your battery. Now, I'm going to give you the answer after we take a quick break, but I'm going to give you a little tease. It can take up to 4 days to fill those batteries. We'll be right back. It is fall, and that means two things. First, I open up my windows at night. And second, yeah, I freeze everybody out, and we fight over the thermostat. But not this year, because everybody's getting Boll & Branch bedding, the sheets that get softer, more comfortable with every wash. Now, it's a mystery how that works, just like the Bermuda Triangle, but it doesn't matter, because Boll & Branch sheets are hands down the best sheets that I have ever slept in. Now, for what it's worth, I think their trick is that they are well-made and they use high-quality organic threads. That's a good thing, because you can get Boll & Branch bedding in all sorts of sizes and colors and styles, along with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, folks, go to BollandBranch.com. That's BollandBranch.com. Enter promo code Brian, that's Brian with a Y, get 20% off your first set of sheets and free shipping when you use that promo code Brian at BollandBranch.com. So who needs a good night's sleep, folks? You do. Buy these sheets at BollandBranch.com. We talk a lot on the podcast about economic issues, things like inflation, interest rates, a recession. Folks, it's a difficult time. If you've been considering ways to diversify your investments, consider gold and silver, and consider American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts. All it takes to get started is a short phone call, and they'll have physical gold or silver delivered right to your door or your IRA or 401k. They're the highest rated firm in the country with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and have thousands of satisfied clients. And if you call them right now, they'll give you up to $1,500 of free silver. So call 866-292-2990 or text PDB, that's the show's letters, to 998899. Again, that's toll-free 866-292-2990 or text PDB to 998899. Welcome back to the PDB. We are talking about the Dirty Green Revolution this morning, which, of course, is the series where we take a critical eye to the industries of solar and wind, batteries, and now electric vehicles. Because, like it or not, folks, that's where we're headed, and you need to be ready for what's to come. So this morning, we're talking about electric vehicles, and we're imagining ourselves staring down our really tough car salesman, and we're asking tough questions in return. And now, we've gotten to our toughest question of all. How long does it take to charge my electric vehicle? So folks, grab that cup of coffee or a cocktail. Let's dive in. First, let's actually start with what's called your power source. Now, people call these chargers or charging stations, but that's not technically accurate. The charger is really inside your car. So we should call these things power sources because that's where you get your power from. But regardless, there are three different levels of electric power sources to fill up your car. They're called level 1, level 2, and level 3 power sources. Now, level 1 is the least efficient. It's the three-prong plug that you already have on your walls at home. So as an example here of how long it would take using a level 1 power source, if you buy a 2022 Tesla Model 3 long-range car, well, if you want to charge that from empty to full, that will take you 4 days. And I, when I saw that, I kept imagining someone buying one of these cars. And after a long day at work, you know, they come home to their spouse and they say, you know, honey, I got to take 4 days off of work, you know, to charge our $100,000 car. Anyway, all right, let me get back on track. The bottom line is that level one charging will take you days to charge. By the way, this is all according to Tesla itself and reporting done by U.S. News and World Report, Carfax, Kelley Blue Book, and Car and Driver magazine. Okay, that takes us to level two power sources, which are a bit faster, but they're also going to cost you a lot more. You have to buy the equipment and have it professionally installed by an electrician at your home. That's a cost of thousands of more dollars. And by the way, you will go from about 4 days of charging to 12 hours, maybe, but more on that in a second. And by the way, good luck if you live in an apartment building or condo, because unless there's a free charging station in your garage, you'll need to stay overnight in a Walmart parking lot. That's because the public charging stations that you see there and elsewhere around town, most of those are level 2 power sources. Well, finally, that means level 3. That's our big dog. Those power stations will take about 30 minutes to 1 hour to fill up your car. Unfortunately, there are very few of those in the United States. According to Carfax, there are fewer than 5,000 level 3 power stations in America, as compared to 35,000 level 2s. And for what it's worth, there are over 115,000 gas stations. That's according to MarketWatch. Now, to be fair, there is some money in Joe Biden's climate change bill to add more level 3 stations. So it is possible that we could see more of these level 3 things pop up down the road. Okay, so that's the summary of our first variable, your power source. But we've still got 4 more variables to go on how long it'll take to fill up your batteries. And depending on each car and the variables involved, well, your charge times might go way up or just down a tiny bit. So, for instance, we now have to consider your what's called maximum charge rate. So remember when I said that your charger is actually inside your car? Well, it is. And each car charges at a different rate. The calculation of that is a bit complicated. You divide the battery capacity by the power rating of your car's onboard charger, and then you subtract 10% of power loss associated with charging it, and whew, you get a headache and your maximum charge rate. Now, some electric vehicles like that Tesla I just mentioned, well, they have very high maximum charge rates, so they can take advantage of the level 3 power stations and get charged up pretty quickly. But others, much slower. So it all depends on the model and the year of manufacture. So bottom line, folks, you can pull up with your very expensive electric vehicle to a level 3 station, expecting a fast charge. But if your car's maximum charge rate is slow, you are going to be waiting many, many, many hours or even days. All right, so let's move on from power source and our charging rates to a variable that's a little bit more understandable, and that is weather. You see, when it's cold outside, batteries just don't like to charge as fast. But then again, batteries also don't like to charge fast when it's hot outside either. And that's because it can affect what's called your electric car's thermal management systems and internal resistance. I have no idea what either of those things mean or do. But I do know that if it's too hot or it's too cold, you're going to be sitting around a lot longer to charge your vehicle. So bottom line here, folks, your electric car is a little bit of a princess and only likes to be charged in Goldilocks-like temperatures. So I am sorry if you live in Arizona or Alaska, because you are probably going to be a little bit too hot or too cold for a fast charge. And if it's wintertime or summer, then we're all in trouble, no matter where we live. In other words, there is no sort of just right with this Goldilocks challenge. Okay, let's talk about our fourth variable. Is your battery empty or full? And that kind of makes sense. That's similar to our gas-powered cars. But you should know that electric vehicle manufacturers tell buyers that their batteries should generally not go below a 20% charge or above an 80% charge, especially when it's hot out because of those thermal management systems and such. Again, the science here is a little bit complicated, but just remember, your battery is a real princess. Finally, there are a collection of other variables that I toss into the same bucket, and I call them miscellaneous variables. So for instance, how long the power cord is from the power station to your car, that actually matters. Or how often you brake, how often you use your air conditioning and your heater, or if you use the car to drive shorter distances or longer distances. So what's interesting is that electric vehicles and their batteries do better with lower speed and shorter distances. That's according to Kelly Blue Book. So folks, there you have it. We have come to the end of our special brief today. We've covered the costs, the repairs, the insurance, the charging variables, all the things that you need to know for dirty green electric vehicles. Now, I hope all of that was informative. And frankly, I hope that we are all much wiser on what's coming. Because remember, states are now passing laws saying that you have to buy these things at the showroom. No more gas-powered cars. And vehicle manufacturers are nodding along in agreement. As a reminder, General Motors has already announced that it's phasing out all gas-powered cars by 2035. Ford is doing the same, though, by the year 2040. So, ready or not, here we come. Now, if you think that this is a good idea, then wonderful. You can now go to a showroom and buy that car as an informed consumer. But if you listen to this brief and you think, you know, this technology isn't quite ready, or you don't like supporting child labor or communists in China for your battery packs, or you think about the price tag of the car and wonder, how will America's poor people and the middle class afford these things? Well, if that's what you're wrestling with this morning, you might want to remember that at the showroom, or if I may be so bold, at the ballot box. Because ultimately, this isn't about cars, not really. This is about politics. If it were about cars, states like California would still let you buy what you wanted when you walked into the showroom. Or GM and Ford would still make what the market desires. But that's not what's happening, is it? So I wish you good luck in whatever decision you make on buying your next car. And for what it's worth, I really, really hope that we get this right, this dirty green revolution. Because if not, all we need to do is look at Europe this morning and realize that recovering from this dirty green mistake, if that's what this turns out to be, well, it's going to be a very, very costly mistake. And with that, one more thing before... Welcome back to the PDB, ladies and gentlemen. One more thing before I let you go. I got a lot of great questions from you all about the podcast yesterday, where we covered dirty green electric vehicles. Now, most emails were really, really great, but a few felt like I missed a couple things, three things in particular. First, I got notes from Kelly B., Jeff Z., and John H. in California. Now, all said that we should talk more about the cost of replacing car batteries, even if a car isn't in an accident. Because their point was that batteries lose their life after a certain number of charges or years, depending on usage and weather. So at some point, every single electric vehicle will need a new replacement battery, and those can run over $20,000. Well, Kelly, Jeff, and John, you are all quite right. And I will include that in the update for when I run this Dirty Green series again. Next, I heard from Scott in Heathsville, Virginia, and Ted in Lexington, Kentucky. They said that I forgot to talk about the price of electricity when thinking about fueling up those batteries. Because for those two gentlemen, electricity is more expensive than gas in their hometown. And look, gentlemen, you are quite right that in some places in America, that is absolutely true. In other places, though, that's not quite as true. Still, this whole issue of expensive electricity here, cheaper electricity there, that's going to become a very big deal, because as we rip out reliable energy and replace it with unreliable solar and wind, you may have both a supply and a cost issue that we can't even fully appreciate right now. Finally, Dennis in Rochester Hills, Michigan. He felt like I should have encouraged listeners to think about what happens during, say, a hurricane or tornado or a forest fire. He asked, will people have enough charge in their cars to flee? Are there fast power stations along the evacuation route? And will you have hours to spend to charge up your car? Or will the flames and wind get to you first? Well, fair point, Dennis. And now everybody else is thinking about your concern, too. Welcome back to the PDB, ladies and gentlemen. One more thing before I let you go. Sean H. from somewhere in America wrote in asking about the Dirty Green series. A series, of course, where we talked about the pros and the cons of renewable energy and batteries and electric vehicles. And it's that last category that Sean had a question about, the cars. In short, he wanted to know, why aren't we considering hybrid cars, which, of course, are those that combine an electric motor and an internal combustion engine? Well, there was one line in Sean's email that really stood out to me. So here it is. Quote, the biggest bonus of hybrids is that we could use much smaller batteries and stretch our natural resources like cobalt and lithium much, much further. End quote. So Sean, you are absolutely right. In fact, the president of Toyota Corporation agrees with you. And I want us to really listen to what I'm about to say. The CEO of Toyota told reporters last month that his company could make 8 plug-in hybrids with the same number of batteries from one fully electric vehicle. Those 8 plug-in cars would dramatically cut carbon emissions more than the one electric vehicle. And consumers, by the way, are saying that they like this option too. These vehicles, the hybrids, have actually sold more this year than fully electric vehicles. That's according to data from research firm Motor Intelligence. So, Sean, here's my takeaway. If this debate were really about climate change or decreasing smog or decreasing our reliance on foreign oil, then of course we would be talking about all kinds of things to include hybrids. But we're not talking about those, are we? Not in our media, not amongst our politicians. Because the dirty green revolution, Sean, is not about climate change or smog or oil. As I've argued, it's about advancing a political revolution, using climate change as a pretext to justify socialism or some variant of that. Now, whether or not you believe me when I highlight the words of progressives saying that, well, that's all right. Because even if we disagree, well, that's what the PDB is all about, letting you make the call. It's October 25th. You're listening to the President's Daily Brief. I'm your host and former CIA officer, Brian Dean Wright. Your morning intel starts now. We've got a special edition of the PDB this morning, and it's special because we are going to talk about something that nobody else is talking about. Last month, the U.S. government acknowledged that the batteries powering the renewable energy revolution in this country, the electric vehicles, the solar and wind farms, all of it, those batteries are produced by child miners in the Congo. Now, we've talked about this on the PDB in the past as a part of our series that I call Dirty Green Energy. But this is official confirmation from the U.S. government itself, and it's a big deal. But then, why isn't this report in the press? Why aren't politicians talking about it? Or why aren't the car manufacturers acknowledging it? Well, we will get to that in a minute. But first, let's get started with today's special brief. 1 month ago this week, the United States government released a report that I bet you didn't hear about. And it's remarkable that you haven't, because the report says this. All the lithium-ion batteries coming from China are produced by child labor. So let me say that again and explain it a bit more. 1 month ago, the U.S. Department of Labor issued a report, and it's called the List of Goods Produced by Child Labor or Forced Labor. And on that list, for the first time, are lithium-ion batteries from China. So why is that a big deal? Well, because about 80% of the world's lithium-ion batteries come from China. And that means that if you have an electric vehicle or a home battery system that perhaps connects to solar panels on your roof, well, the U.S. government is now saying that almost certainly you have purchased a product powered by child labor. But as shocking or uncomfortable as that might be, that's not the big news here. You, the consumer, are actually not the big news. The big news is this. The U.S. government wants this country to ditch fossil fuels because of climate change and instead switch everything about modern life, the way that we live, drive, and work, to renewable technologies. But those technologies do not function without lithium-ion batteries. And what the U.S. government is now acknowledging is that these batteries do not exist in the marketplace without child labor. And guess what? We are going to do it all anyway. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the big news. And that is what we are going to talk about this morning. Now, for those of you who are either new to the PDB or unclear about what I just said, maybe it doesn't quite connect for you. Well, let me put these pieces together. And to do that, let's start with this. Let's imagine that we have two cars in front of us. One uses an internal combustion engine that requires gas for its fuel, and the other is electric. So the gas-fueled car has a battery, it's true. It's a lead-acid battery, and it works pretty well. It helps fire up the car in the morning, keeps the lights on and the radio playing. But as most of us know, those batteries do go bad relatively quickly, and they don't store really a ton of energy. Now, on the other hand, that electric vehicle, it runs on a lithium-ion battery. Now, the reasons for that is that they tend to last much longer, these lithium-ion batteries, and they hold more energy. That's why electric vehicles and all sorts of other products in our modern lives, like the electronics that you might use in your phone and such, well, all of them have these types of lithium-ion batteries. But if we dig deeper, inside that lithium-ion battery, you've got different materials. And as you can guess, lithium is one. But odds are there's also cobalt. About 20% of the weight of an electric vehicle's batteries actually comes from the mineral cobalt. That's according to the U.S. Department of Energy. But the problem for America and for other countries is that most of the world's supply of cobalt comes from one place, the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In fact, they control about 70% of the market. And of that 70%, the Chinese government or its party-controlled businesses have secured about half of that supply. And that's definitely and absolutely bad enough if you don't like the communists. But what the report from the U.S. Department of Labor is now acknowledging is that upwards of a third of the cobalt mines in the Congo are artisanal, which is a fancy way of saying that individuals or small numbers of miners dig into the ground with their hands or hand tools for cobalt stones. And in the Congo, that means kids. Again, according to the Department of Labor's report, children as young as 6 years old are lowered into hand-dug mine shafts or open-pit mines sometimes, and then they claw away at the dirt with whatever they have, usually their hands, and they collect chunks of cobalt. So let me read one section of this report. Again, this is what the U.S. government wrote just 1 month ago. Quote, an 11-year-old boy grabs a bag weighing up to 80 pounds and hoists it over his head as contaminated water streams down his face. He carries that bag of washed cobalt stones across a muddy path. He works up to 12 hours a day, 24 hours if he's underground. He is one of the many children found at the cobalt mining sites in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Yet, he is by no means the youngest. Nor will he be the last. And it is that cobalt, ladies and gentlemen, that is ending up in China. That is, of course, unless the mine shaft or the pit collapses on the child and buries them alive, which does happen. The report acknowledges that. The point is that this cobalt is then sent and refined to China, along with other minerals like lithium. And then it all gets made into batteries. Again, 80% of the world's supply. And those batteries power the electric vehicles that you now see on the roads, and maybe in your driveway. Now, what's remarkable is that you are being forced to drive one of these vehicles if you want to purchase a new car in the coming years. To refresh our memories on that, the states of California, Washington, and New York have all mandated that new cars sold in their states must be electric starting in the years 2030 or 2035. And it's not just states. Car companies like General Motors have announced that they will stop making gas and diesel engines by 2035 and produce only electric. If we can think of that a little bit differently, the effect here is that the U.S. government, state governments, and even car companies are all saying that instead of those, you know, dirty gas or diesel engines, you now have to buy cars with batteries mined by children in Africa and then manufactured in China. And none of that is opinion. That's all according to the U.S. Department of Labor and its new report issued 1 month ago. And that's pretty remarkable. And just to emphasize the point, it's not just electric vehicles that we're talking about here. It's also the batteries that help capture the power from solar and wind farms that are being installed all across America right now. As just one of the hundreds of examples, there's the Gemini Solar Project just outside of Las Vegas, Nevada, and it's one of the largest in the United States. It'll power 400,000 homes. The batteries that make that whole thing possible will be 100% manufactured by China's contemporary Amperex technology company. That was announced last week. So if I can state this differently, given what the U.S. Department of Labor has now confirmed, the Gemini Project in Las Vegas does not function without child miners from the Congo and their batteries made in China. That is now known and accepted by the United States government. And that, folks, is why on the PDB, we call this whole enterprise, the cars, the solar farms, the batteries, all of it, an industry made up of dirty green energy. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask and answer two questions. How would a supporter of renewables or dirty green energy respond to these facts, to this latest report from the Department of Labor? How would they justify the use of child labor and these Chinese batteries? Because, folks, they do defend and explain it. The question, though, is whether it's compelling to you and to the rest of America. So we are going to talk about their response, and as always, we are going to leave it up to you to decide. We'll be right back. It is fall, and that means two things. First, I open up my windows at night. And second, yeah, I freeze everybody out, and we fight over the thermostat. But not this year, because everybody's getting Boll & Branch bedding, the sheets that get softer, more comfortable with every wash. Now, it's a mystery how that works, just like the Bermuda Triangle, but it doesn't matter, because Boll & Branch sheets are hands down the best sheets that I have ever slept in. Now, for what it's worth, I think their trick is that they are well-made and they use high-quality organic threads. That's a good thing, because you can get Boll & Branch bedding in all sorts of sizes and colors and styles, along with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, folks, go to BollAndBranch.com. That's BollAndBranch.com. Enter promo code Brian, that's Brian with a Y, get 20% off your first set of sheets and free shipping when you use that promo code Brian at BollAndBranch.com. So who needs a good night's sleep, folks? You do. Buy these sheets at BollAndBranch.com. We talk a lot on the podcast about economic issues, things like inflation, interest rates, a recession. Folks, it's a difficult time. If you've been considering ways to diversify your investments, consider gold and silver, and consider American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts. All it takes to get started is a short phone call, and they'll have physical gold or silver delivered right to your door or your IRA or 401k. They're the highest rated firm in the country with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and have thousands of satisfied clients. And if you call them right now, they'll give you up to $1,500 of free silver. So call 866-292-2990 or text PDB, that's the show's letters, to 998899. Again, that's toll-free 866-292-2990 or text PDB to 998899. Welcome back to the PDB. Today we are talking about a report issued 1 month ago by the U.S. Department of Labor. It acknowledged that lithium-ion batteries from China are comprised of material, specifically cobalt, that's mined by children in the Congo. And that's a really big deal, because those lithium-ion batteries are in a wide range of products, but most especially in electric vehicles and the batteries that store energy from solar and wind farms. In other words, the renewable energy revolution is powered by child labor, and the U.S. government just acknowledged it. But to be fair, we should ask how supporters of renewable energy or dirty green energy might respond to this Department of Labor report, because maybe their answers are convincing. Well, as it turns out, we don't have their exact quotes or reactions to this report. More on that in a second. But we do know, generally speaking, how they'd likely respond based on their policy priorities and views on climate change. So let's explore those. First, they would admit, perhaps reluctantly, that this report from the U.S. Department of Labor, well, it highlights an inconvenient and unwelcome truth. So consider an article by the Washington Post that they ran about 5 days ago, and they entitled it, "Electric Vehicle Supply Chains Have a Human Rights Problem." So in that article, they acknowledged that the mining process for lithium and cobalt and other materials can have terrible effects globally for the environment and human rights, to include worker rights. So to be clear, there is no debate that the problem exists. Now, what they would point to, however, is that they're actually working on solutions. In fact, the U.S. government passed a bill last August called the Inflation Reduction Act. As PDB listeners might recall, that was a $370 billion bill that was really not about inflation, but rather climate change. It was full of incentives to build out the supply chain for the renewable or dirty green energy revolution. And one such incentive was to build batteries here in America. In fact, there was a $7 billion package for companies who are interested in doing that. And those companies, and indeed those factories, are getting built, or I should say, will be. But what's unclear is how long that will take to build out that capacity. Estimates are many years to a decade or longer. But let's just assume that those things get built, that is, the battery manufacturing plants. Well, that only solves part of the problem, because that's really just about the assembly of the battery. We still have to mine the minerals and then refine them. Well, supporters would say that the bill that I just mentioned, the Inflation Reduction Act, well, it also has incentives for those things too. Just last week, Joe Biden promised $2.8 billion to mining and refining companies to help them get started. And that's because we have virtually no lithium or cobalt mining or refining capacity in this country. Well, even if we can actually eventually assemble the batteries. But even still, that leaves a major problem. You see, to open those mines or those refineries, you need permits. And according to a recent analysis by Reuters News Service, it currently takes 10 years or longer to obtain a mining permit in the United States, if you can get one. And to refresh our memories on that uncertainty, well, there are lithium mines being proposed in Nevada and North Carolina, but environmental groups do not want those built. And in some cases, the Biden administration actually agrees that they shouldn't be, for instance, in Nevada. And that means, folks, that even in the best case scenario, for the next 10 years or so, we are going to have to rely on foreign mining companies for the materials inside our lithium ion batteries. And that takes us to our last set of questions for the morning. Folks, why are we not talking about this more? And why is it that in the past month, we haven't heard about this report from the U.S. Labor Department that says that we are buying these Chinese batteries made by Congolese kids? Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll offer up my thoughts on those questions. And as always, let you decide. We'll be right back.
Wherever adventure takes you, Rain-X leads the way. Start your next adventure with new Rain-X truck and SUV wiper blades. With a sleek design and premium components, Rain-X truck and SUV wiper blades are rugged, weather-tough, and feature graphene for extended durability. Plus, an indicator lets you know when it's time to replace them. Outsmart the elements with new Rain-X truck and SUV wiper blades. Available at AutoZone.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, America's number one motorcycle insurer. Everything is more exhilarating when you're on your motorcycle. Just like your bike is more protected when you choose Progressive Motorcycle Insurance. They offer coverage for your bike starting as low as $75 per year. And they keep things affordable with discounts like paid in full, multi-policy, and responsible driver. So raise your kickstands and get to quoting at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Premium is for state minimum liability coverage and excludes state fees and taxes. Rate not available in Massachusetts. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Welcome back to the PDB, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking this morning about renewable or dirty green energy, specifically about a report from the U.S. Labor Department that states that lithium-ion batteries from China that we use here in America are built by child labor in cobalt mines in the Congo. And that's a problem for not just America, but for the rest of the world, too. China makes about 80% of the world's supply of lithium-ion batteries, which means that as we all clamor for our electric vehicles and solar and wind farms, we're all competing for the same child-made batteries. So let's pivot from facts and data to analysis and opinion. And let's do that by asking, is it really a problem that there are children in foreign lands mining for our batteries? I mean, I know that the U.S. Labor Department put out this report and they say that it's a problem, but wouldn't you assume that if it were really a problem, we'd be talking about it? And I ask you these questions earnestly. Have any of you heard about this Labor Department report over the past month? Has a single member of the U.S. House or Senate raised this report in outrage or even just mild concern? How about mainstream media? Have you heard anything from them? How about General Motors or other car companies that are putting these batteries inside their cars? How about that company in Las Vegas that last week signed that deal with China's main battery company that will exclusively provide these batteries for their Gemini solar farm? Or perhaps we should ask if Joe Biden has talked about this report, which makes clear that the foundation for America's entire renewable industry is dependent on child labor. Well, the answer to all of these questions is no. None of them are talking about this. They just aren't. I would encourage you to look for yourself today, or reach out to your senator or congressman by using senate.gov or house.gov. Ask them what they think. But in the meantime, why is it that all these folks aren't talking about this report? Well, I'm going to let you answer that question, but I want to offer you this as you reflect. Last Wednesday, America's Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm and Joe Biden were at an event to announce $2.8 billion in federal grants to companies involved in the production of electric vehicle batteries. Now, during that event, Joe Biden said that America was witnessing a, quote, new industrial revolution, end quote, with our transition, of course, from fossil fuels to the embrace of renewable energy. And that struck me as pretty remarkable, that this idea of a new industrial revolution. Because if we remember our history classes, the last industrial revolution was in the mid to late 1800s. It involved a cascade of new technological innovations. Americans, in fact, moved from farms and ranches to cities to take advantage of all of them. But it also required a new generation of miners, coal miners specifically, to power all the new innovations. And ultimately, that meant kids. They were small. They were underpaid. They had no voice in how they were treated, and they were abused. Many died of black lung in the years to follow. So as I read Joe Biden's remarks, it seemed quite fitting that he would reference this moment, this dirty green revolution, as a new industrial revolution. Because he's right, actually. This is. People who want this renewable revolution will do whatever it takes to make it happen, right down to the kids in the mines. Because they can't claim ignorance now. The U.S. Labor Department's report makes it very clear. But I'll tell you, enough of Washington, D.C. and America's media. It now means that you and your families have a choice. Do you all want to be part of this revolution? And if so, well, all right, you have accepted that we must have child miners because of, well, a variety of different reasons, but climate change and it being a massive crisis, that could be one. Fair enough. But for the rest of you, my counsel is that you and your families need to start talking about this report. And as you do, remember, your voice of opposition or alarm, it's not just about you. It's also about some kids very far away in the Congo who have no voice at all. And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes your morning brief. As always, we close out the show reminding each other of why we are here, talking about our country and our world. It's the creed of every good spy and every smart American. It's from John chapter 8, verse 32. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Good day.